Welcome to Podcast 2187. Enjoy the show. And don't forget to submit your blaster for inspection.
Welcome to Podcast 2187. This episode marks our second year anniversary, whatever you want to call it. This is the podcast birthday. We just turned two. And I'm excited about that. And we have our full panel tonight. We have Andrea and Mark and Jared. So how are you doing tonight? Or today, depending on when you're listening
Hello.
To it. Hi.
Well,
this is super energetic right now.
She stepped in, and then I thought she was going to keep talking. I didn't want to cut
Who,
her
me?
Off.
Yeah. I was just saying hello.
Oh, all right.
Like Lionel Richie.
Is it me you're looking for?
Yeah.
Well, at least you didn't
Hi, everybody.
Say it was Adele.
I like the song Easy by the Commodores.
Okay.
That is a good one.
All right. Hey. You know what? We have stuff to discuss tonight, so I'm just going to, like, start, I guess, because I'm not going to start talking about other songs. So, I think the first thing to really address would be that The Last Jedi may be coming out on March 27th on Blu-ray DVD. Another interesting thing about that, too, is it appears that there will be a 4K option as well. This will be the first one. Because I think it was like Best Buy. I think.
Wait, March 27th?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I think it was Best Buy had the Steelbook 4K as an option.
Why was that reaction like that, Andrea?
That's my boyfriend's birthday.
That's a good thing.
Just radio sounds. So
that's a good thing, no?
I know that guy.
It's a good date.
Birthday? Whose birthday?
That's Andrea and I's boyfriend.
Oh. Oh my goodness. What am I gonna do with you guys?
So, yeah, that's the rumored date, and that is also except potentially on 4K. So, not really much else to really get to there. Just wanted to let everybody know. And then I guess the next news thing is that I saw on making StarWars.net, it was reporting based off of some quotes from Variety that John Williams is saying that he is, as of now, he's focused on doing the music for Episode 9 and completing it. It doesn't seem like he has any plans to be stepping aside or anything. And he even said at one point, like, basically, I have good hands. Like, I don't have arthritis. He's like, I can still play the piano. Like, all that part's good. He's like, so I can still write the music. So I don't know, you know, you may see more and more of someone else conducting it, but it seems like he is pretty focused on writing the Episode 9 soundtrack for Star Wars. So can't really complain about that.
He decided to get back to it, yeah, baby.
Was it you, Mark, who posited that they like gave him some sort of like stem cell experimental injection or something? Because he, I remember a while back, someone was like, man, a couple years ago, we were worried about him making it, you know, to the Force Awakens premiere, and now he's like touring again, and just doing awesome. It's great.
Not, the thing is, he had a back issue,
right?
He had, you know, and he doesn't do the whole concerts anymore. So, whereas he would do a whole concert and conduct a whole concert, he's just not.
He does appearances at concerts.
Yeah,
where other people do most of it.
Yeah, and he'll come in and do a section, and, you know, and you've got that, and you've got that now there's uncredited conductors on the soundtrack. Because it was, you know, I don't even think they mentioned that Dudamel, LA Philharmonic, I think, is where he resides, but he conducted some of the music for Last Jedi. Now, obviously, John Williams wrote it, but,
right,
you know, Dudamel conducted it. And I think William Ross might have conducted some, too. I'm not sure.
He did. William Ross did do some for Last Jedi. And I know Gustavo Dudamel did the main title for Force Awakens. I don't know if he did it for Last Jedi or not.
I heard he did some for Last Jedi as well. I have to check.
Okay.
But the thing is, that it's really not a big deal because, you know, if you know anything about, like, Giacchino stuff, Giacchino barely conducts. I don't think he conducts at all, does he?
No, I don't think he does.
It's mostly Tim Simonek that he works with who does all that.
Right.
And then you've got people like Brian Tyler who love to conduct. So
he even conducts other people's stuff.
Right. So it's not one of those situations to where, you know, it's not one of the situations to where you have to conduct, but sometimes you can definitely feel a difference if that's what you're used to. You know, if you're used to John conducting Star Wars, it will feel a little bit different if it's somebody else.
Yeah, and like, I don't, obviously I have no control over this whatsoever, but what I would like to see, if he's okay with it, is to have him be sitting in the room while the other guy is conducting, and he can still make the comments. He can still say, all right, this section over here, you know, be stronger for this part. Because that's what he, between takes, so to speak, of conducting, he'll say that. He'll give that feedback to them. So that way,
I'm
can
sure he
still,
does.
I'm like, it could still help transition the physical conducting for somebody else. Jim. What's that?
I don't think he goes home and sleeps. I don't think he creates this. It's well, like,
I mean,
it's like now it's in your hands. I'm going to check ingredients. Out.
Yeah. I'm going to take a nap. You guys got this.
Put my name on it. I trust you.
It would literally be like a chef putting all the ingredients together and then going, okay, I'll be back when it's done.
Yeah, but some people do that, though. I mean, I don't think he would, but some people do.
Some composers?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but okay, look. Come on. We know who we're talking about.
I know. I don't think he would, but it happens.
But
Tim, who specifically are you bad mouthing? Tell us. Name this.
Tim's talking about Zimmer.
Hey, don't bad mouth Hans Zimmer.
As long as you're not bad mouthing my precious Silvestri.
Silvestri's amazing.
Oh, Silvestri. No, Silvestri does it too. Name. It's Alan. It's Alan Silver.
Wait, he changed it to Silvestri?
Oh, sure. His real name is Alan Silver. He just didn't like it. It didn't sound good, cool enough. So he changed it to Alan Silvestri. He's like, this sounds Hollywood. You know that?
I did not know that. That's hilarious, though.
Yeah, because it's not true.
I was going to say that sounds like the backwards of what it would likely be.
You know, the one thing I do notice, like, though, is that especially, you know, I got Apple Music, and this thing is just phenomenal. I don't know how I ever existed without it. I almost feel like I'm stealing from all these musicians because everything's there for me for free. I mean, I spend $10 on it or whatever it costs, but you look and you start looking through who did the tracks, and I'm noticing that they're giving credit now, at least on some stuff. Like if you look at Dunkirk, you see that it's not Zimmer on everything. You see that they're giving him credit, other people credit.
That's good.
And so I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's for everything or if it's just they're kind of, you know, because of the way things work, they just don't let him put his name on everything anymore that people did.
Yeah, I'd imagine there'd have to, like, Apple in doing that would have to base it off of some sort of informational package or something that they receive from the music place. You know, I don't think they just look into it themselves and like, oh, it looks like this person did it. So I would imagine they would put in whatever they're given.
Well, there is good. There was one. There's a Hans Zimmer website. It's not official, but it pretty much lists who the composer was for every single track, for every album Hans Zimmer's ever worked on. And I'm not sure where they got the information from, but it's legit. It's out there. It's not like they're making stuff up, but yeah, I like seeing these people recognized because, you know, when the name's going to escape me right now, Tim, but when the new guy, not the new guy, but for the most recent Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Jeff Zanelli.
Right. Jeff Zanelli, he did a lot of the tracks for the other Pirates of the Caribbean.
Even the first one, yeah.
Movies. I didn't know that the reason I liked him so much was because he specifically did certain tracks, and so it's nice to see him get a chance. But you don't know that unless you know who to credit.
Right, and it's great to see that because, yeah, a lot of people work on his stuff other than him. And originally, yeah, a lot of them didn't get credit. And that way, when these names start to come out, there's not a whole lot of recognition for their talents. And especially with Jeff Zanelli, he even had Steven Spielberg at one point recognize him and handpick him for one of his projects.
and the West, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, because he's good, but his name wasn't really out there, so nobody was really hiring him a whole lot as far as the bigger scale things. So, but now with Pirates that he was just doing, that kind of helps continually push him out there. So it's good to see the legitimate artists working on, like, getting credit for their work, you know?
What was your guys' overall opinion on The Last Jedi score? I don't know if we really got into it that much or if we kind of touched on my thought on it.
I think we briefly talked about it, but, like, super briefly.
Yeah, what's your thought?
I mean, I liked it. I don't remember... I mean, I've only still only seen it three times. I need to see it.
Have you listened to it outside of
more so? I haven't this time, and I felt like compelled a little bit more to listen to it at the end of The Force Awakens. Like, and I almost wonder if it's sort of the cliffhanger-y ending of The Force Awakens because of that moment. Like, the way the ending of the movie had me like anticipating seeing what. Luke again so much and seeing where he and Rey went and wanted to see Finn wake up and all this stuff. Like I wanted to see what was going to happen so much that I think that added to it, especially because I think some of the best music for me was at the very end. I liked it, all of the Force Awakens stuff, but the Jedi steps at the end and it really, really haunted me. And I feel like some of those repeating themes from The Force Awakens were the stuff that stood out the most to me while watching it, and I haven't felt that compulsion to go back and listen to it. Off the top of my head, I can't really like remember what the music was at the very end with, you know, Broomstick McStable Boy or whatever looking off into the stars.
It's really just variations on older Star Wars themes. That's all.
It's not anything, it doesn't really stand out, right? Like.
Well, no, I mean there is, it's not so much. Bad, but... No, it's the force. I think it's a force theme, right, Tim?
For the very end.
With the broom boy.
Yeah.
Right, but before that, there is, like, what is it? A force theme on a piano. Or is it Luke's theme on piano? Like they're real when they're doing when the kids are playing with the Luke Skywalker doll that they made versus the AT-ATs.
I think I want to say it's just like a tiny clip of Luke's theme,
but it's just kind of, I don't know, it is very childlike in the way they play.
Yeah.
it's very stripped down a little bit.
Yeah, and like simplistic almost,
right?
I mean, so I know I didn't really discuss with you on the show at least what I had thought of it also, but just to kind of quickly summarize, you know, obviously there's a part of me that's going to miss the whole concert aspect to it. And I think a lot of people were expecting, because if you look at Empire and Attack of the Clones, which I know we'll get to later, if you look at the musical elements to those, you get a lot of really big and I can't think of the right word other than big, but concert type moments.
Operatic?
Not quite. Just some, you know, I think you get my point, like my gist. And for this one, there really isn't anything, any like one big concert suite sound or anything like that you can go for. It's just that, like Mark said, it's a lot of returning and refining and next step of music that we already know. So I enjoy it. I enjoy listening to it. There's no doubt it was made for the movie and not for a concert, but I still enjoy listening to it.
I feel like... nothing really stuck out at me. Like, in The Force Awakens, like, the first time I watched it, I really liked Rey's theme. And I liked the last score where she's meeting Luke. But in this one, I don't really remember anything, like, sticking out besides the silence of Holdo crashing the ship into the... destroyer. But at the same time, I feel like it takes me like a few watches of the movie to actually get to the point where I can digest it enough to take in the soundtrack. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like sometimes you like can't, I can't like focus in on that stuff when I'm like watching it for the first or second time because I'm still like, oh my god, I can't believe this is gonna happen. Like, oh my god, and I haven't listened to it like by itself yet, so I can't really say. But like I said, nothing like jumped out. Like, oh my god, I freaking love this. Like it did with The Force Awakens, which is kind of sad, but. If it was mostly throwbacks, that makes sense because you're kind of already used. It's not anything super new, so your brain's already kind of used to hearing that sound.
Yeah, that's a fair point because I feel like, you know, John Williams absolutely, of course, delivered with what he was supposed to do. It's just a different thing. I think people were expecting new, and there wasn't a whole lot of new. Just like I said, like an evolution of what we already have, which is very familiar.
And if you've heard that, like obviously we've all heard the old stuff like a million times, it's not gonna like register in your brain as you're watching the movie, I don't think, unless you're like really in tune with it, like you're like looking for it. But if you're just like watching the movie, you're not gonna really notice that like, oh, they're playing the same stuff I've heard, like I've already heard this. It's not anything new to your brain.
Because actually one of the things that stood out to me when I was watching it in the theater at the, was somewhere toward the beginning, one of the pieces actually reminded me of something from Revenge of the Sith. So, like, that kind of stood out because I wasn't expecting that kind of sound, but it's still previous Star Wars, which is fine with me, but, you know.
I'm chill with it. I just need to listen to, like, it on Spotify or something, like, by itself.
You might want to listen to it on Apple Music. They have a lot of soundtracks there that are readily available at your fingertips.
Are they sponsoring?
Are you trying to get an ad?
Brought to you by Apple Music.
Paid for and sponsored by Apple Music.
On my Google phone.
Or if you buy the actual CD via Amazon and you get the hard disk, you also get it digitally as well.
Or you could just listen on Spotify.
My idea is still better.
I listen to
buy it on vinyl. It'll probably sound better than all of our ideas.
Andrew, I like this. I listened to Hans Zimmer live in Prague because of Apple Music.
It was
pretty good.
Because of Apple Music.
Listen, he helped me get through nursing school, so I can't.
With what?
He paid her way, okay? You said get into it.
Is this your other boyfriend that I don't know about? Zimmer Daddy?
Ew. Gross. Episode over. I have to go throw up.
It's so weird. It just got a little weird.
I feel sick.
What music was it that you listened to?
Blake and I actually made like an entire like playlist of scores. So I just listened to that. I would just play it on shuffle, so I couldn't even tell you, like, what I actually listened to. Let me see. One sec, guys.
Well, this article is comparing Zimmer's scores to those of Jerry Goldsmith, Alan Silvestri, John Williams, Howard Shore, James Horner, or even the great Bernard Herrmann. I kind of have to disagree about that part, but anyway.
Well, here's the thing. I've said it recently, you know, not to get on a tangent any more than we already do on this show, but really, when he is paired with Nolan, it is absolute magic. Yeah. You know, when Jared and I sat there and watched Dunkirk, it was amazing. Now that score, I listened to the Dunkirk score by itself, and it's nothing. It's okay, but the score in the movie was transcendent. That movie worked so well with that music. And I think that this is one of those pairings that doesn't come along that often. It's a Williams, you know, Williams Spielberg. It's a Herrmann and Hitchcock sort of deal. And so I think they're geniuses together. And I look forward to more movies from them. But he's not, you know, the be-all, end-all Zimmer, as far as I'm concerned. He's good. He definitely does some good music. Man, when he's with Christopher Nolan.
The other level. Most of the stuff I listened to is actually from when he was in Christopher Nolan movies.
Which ones?
There's a lot of the Batman movies on here.
It's also James Newton Howard.
Okay, nerd. who else do I have a lot of? There's a lot of John Williams on here. I put a lot of video game soundtrack songs on here too. So yeah.
Like Skyrim, is that on there?
There's some Skyrim stuff. I put a lot of stuff from Dragon Age Inquisition on here because I love that soundtrack. There's actually something from Pacific Rim on here.
That's pretty good.
Dragon Age Inquisition, is that Trevor Morris?
Yeah, that's who did it. Yep.
Trevor Morris is
it's awesome. Amazing.
I haven't listened to Dragon Age Inquisition, but he's done.
It's really good.
I have a soundtrack of his that he signed. Didn't get to meet him, but I still got that. That was cool. Just throwing that reason. Not Immortals. It was something like that.
The Immortals with Henry Cavill?
It might have been. He did that, did he? That's
a great soundtrack. Yeah.
Yeah, then it's that one, yeah.
Well, what a jerk you are. I'm ready to have one.
I should send you a picture.
No, you should send me the disc. Go ahead, send it to me.
Well, he didn't send the disc. He sent the case, so I can send you the disc.
No, send me the case. I can go ahead and sell it like I did my Quentin Tarantino signed laser disc of Reservoir Dogs, which I regret.
Yeah, that sounds like a regretful thing.
Yeah, considering I met him in person to get it signed, yeah, I regret it. Hey, where's Jared? Jared, you live?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay.
Well, here, let me just wrap up, because the last part of the John Williams thing was that this is a quote. This is, Johnson was so delighted with the results that Williams says he would like to release a version of, or he would eventually like to release a version of the film without the dialogue and effects, just the music playing in the foreground. All the accompanimental music will be brought forward, every gesture, the music traveling along with the moods and textures, references to characters, and so on. I don't know if we'll ever get that, but it's a nice idea.
Yeah. sounds pretty good. What do you guys think? Out there.
I'm having a coughing fit. I'm still trying to get over my cold.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're forgiven for not saying anything immediately.
I don't know.
No, you're not.
I don't feel like I have anything to add. I feel like it's interesting.
So that ends the
John Williams scores portion.
Yeah, that ends the score portion.
No, not yet. Why are you? Is there really a lot of news? Are you that excited to get to the prequel discussion?
I want Star Wars Wars.
It's gonna go down, guys.
Oh boy.
I was gonna say though, I like the tidbit that you mentioned, Mark. Just the trend of like crediting that stuff more is interesting. I remember being in college and having a friend who was I think I mentioned before on the podcast that I was friends with all people in the theater department, I wasn't a theater major. It was fun though. They were all weirdos, but one of my friends was like learning about scores and soundtracks for one of her film courses, and she did all this research on Danny Elfman. She was all super disappointed because. Oh, yeah. Like he'd farmed out all this stuff, like not just with conducting, but like composing, you know, portions of different scores and whatnot. And it's just like he's really just a team of people, not even like a dude anymore, you know. And it was just that was kind of disappointing. And then finding out how much like he kind of took credit from Henry Selick for Nightmare Before Christmas, it was really disappointing as well. And then between him and Tim Burton both kind of taking credit for that, when like most of the music, you know, is at least. Went through Selick, and it was all, you know, sung by him and directed by him. It's like the guy actually made that movie, but then two other people get all the credit for it. But I don't know, it's cool to think that, you know, still they're going to acknowledge, you know, if it was done under Williams's watch or under his guidance, but they'll give the people the credit that they deserve. And I don't know, that's or Zimmer or whatever. That I think that's a That's
cool. And I think when you look at, especially, you know, there's only a few times it's actually happened in Williams's career Williams's, but either way, you know, Chamber of Secrets, it'll say orchestrations and additional music by William Ross, I think, on the cover of the album. Yeah. And then for this one, I think it even says on the cover or the back cover that it's orchestrations by William Ross. Is that correct?
I think so. I know in the credits for the movie, it says conducting by him and orchestrations, I think. Was Pete Anthony credited either? I don't remember.
And Tim, since you're far more eloquent at explaining it, explain for the audience what orchestration is. Or I could always do it if you're feeling tongue-tied.
No, I think I would be better to contribute to what you like say.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Uh-huh. I'm gonna give the layman's term for everybody. It's essentially putting pen to paper for the most part. You know, you can come up with a melody and a theme in your head. You know, like if you're doing Kylo's music, it's like dun 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 dun. You can hum that all day if you think of it. But then what do you write down? You know, how do you put that to paper? What note are you writing? And so a lot of times with composers, they compose the music, they orchestrate it, but depending on the time or how they're doing, they may need a little help. And so in this situation, it sounds like that's what happened with John Williams. John Williams may have been writing the music alongside William Ross, and William Ross, okay, well, that's, you know, B sharp, that's a this, and he's putting it down. And it's like, yeah, that's right. That's right. So they're putting it down on paper. And so depending on how much help a person gets, you want to give the person credit. So it's not as if William Ross is writing the music. He's just doing the orchestrations or is that pretty much accurate, Tim?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add to that is just that the orchestrator basically adapts the music to an orchestra. For them, yeah, for the paper, so that each section knows what they have to do to come together to make the sound that the composer wants.
And the string, this woodwinds and the cello and everybody. And
sometimes the composer does the orchestrations themselves, but oftentimes it's just too much, too big, too much going on. It doesn't really work. So oftentimes you find teams. So that's why, like, John Williams and William Ross, that's a big team. Like, Brian Tyler and Matthew Llewellyn, they're a big team. And you can go on from there. Everybody has almost like a main orchestrator. So because they know each other's sounds and styles and what they like. So that's kind of how it works, I guess.
Yeah, and what's funny is if you ever listen to, especially with someone like for Giacchino's guys, for example, when they go out and they do their own music, it's like, this sounds, you know, I don't know if Giacchino's really playing his music or he's playing Giacchino's music or what, because they're really interchangeable a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the guys that he worked with, especially on Alias for like Chad Sider, and I think it was I don't know if it's Tilton or not, but some of these guys, their music sounds alike, and it's good, especially if you like that sound. So, you know, with Williams is very distinct. You know, there was a thread that we were talking about that I don't know if I don't think you were on Twitter at the time, Jared, but there was a conversation, you know, about some of the music from Return of the Jedi and how, you know, Alexander Courage did some of it, helped, you know, put it together and orchestrate it. And it's kind of interesting the fact that the guy who wrote the theme for Star Trek is helping with the music for Jedi.
For sure.
And they're all good friends like that. So it's nice to see, you know, there's this little community where everybody helps each other out. Versus the community where everybody runs from Zimmer.
Yeah, there are stories about his writing crew. I guess we'll leave it at that. I don't know. I'm trying to look it up because, I can't remember if Pete Anthony had anything to do with Last Jedi or not, and it's going to bug me. So, like, Mark, well, you can keep talking about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I honestly think that, you know, in light of how the score was produced for Last Jedi, in light of how, you know, Rian Johnson temp tracked it and turned it over to Williams, I honestly feel that 9's probably going to be a better score. There is definitely parts of Last Jedi that I absolutely love. I do think Force Awakens is a stronger listening experience as a whole than Last Jedi. But I'm really looking forward to J.J. Abrams and John Williams working together again. And I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, it's only a matter of months until we get to hear his work on Solo. So,
yeah,
it should be good. You know, got some music coming up.
And here for The Last Jedi, John Williams is listed as the conductor and orchestrator. So he definitely did do at least some of the orchestration. And then, of course, William Ross, too. So, okay.
All right, Andrew. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, wait.
We're gonna fight about.
There is one more thing. And it's about Star Wars Rebels. This is also an article on making Star Wars. It says that season 4 will be coming back next month. And there are some episode descriptions, two of them.
These are all spoilers, though.
Well, no, the first one isn't. The second one kind of is, but the first one isn't.
Yes, it is. The episode description is a spoiler.
I think it's okay to read these, though, because they're, like, officially released.
Yeah, but that's, like, what'll be on, like, the cable description. Like,
yeah, but I think you okay when you – all right.
Do it. No, as long as we preface it, like, with, like, these episode descriptions are more spoilery than usual. So, yes. Tune out if you don't like it for like a minute and a half or whatever. And if you do want to hear it, stick around.
Yeah. I mean, because like you guys were saying, they are the episode descriptions. So just, I guess, look at it that way. But February 24th, the episode Jedi Knight, spelled like, you know, N-I-G-H-T. The description
like
says, night. Right.
Like Nighty Night.
Anyway.
Jedi Evening.
It says... Yeah. The Ghost crew infiltrates the Imperial headquarters on Lothal to save one of their own.
Yes. To save Hera.
Right. The one who was kidnapped in the finale.
Right.
Yes.
So, Doom.
One would think, but it's not like, you know, the bartender. Was it Joe, the hammerhead bartender from the first season? That would be a huge, like, surprise. That'd be Shyamalan level shocking.
Well, okay, so, but Doom, D-U-M-E, is the March 3rd episode, and the description for that says, this is the slightly more spoilery one, it says, reeling from a devastating loss, the Ghost crew rallies together to find a new purpose and resolve.
Reeling.
Reeling.
Devastating. Doom.
A devastating loss.
Who dies?
You think that Kanan's real last name, Is because Ezra died? Like, that's why it's the title? No. I think, yeah, this is what we've been... I wouldn't say we've been, like, wanting the character to die, but feeling that he needs to for dramatic purposes. The majority of us on this podcast have felt this way for...
Who are we saying dies? Kanan?
Yeah, because his name is Caleb Doom.
Right, it's his last name.
That way. Oh. It's not Temple of Doom, it's
Oh, I thought... yeah, that's what I was reading, like... When you said that,
it's capitals D-U-M-E, like you put on a tombstone.
Yeah, it was Caleb, right? Caleb Doom.
Yes, Caleb Doom became Kanan Jarrus.
Right. So with the episode title being Doom, and then that description, and the fact that Hera is the one who was kidnapped, you know,
and we know that Hera survives past this, so
because of Rogue One,
all these things added together equal. Goodbye, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Rest in pieces.
We'll see you in reruns, man. You're out of Star Wars for now.
So here, and this is completely speculation, but who should it be if somebody's going to take down Kanan?
Oh, Thrawn?
Thrawn.
Okay, because I know some people would like it to be Vader just because he needs to take down all the Jedi.
No,
I'm not saying I think that, but
I think he's setting up some kind of trap, and this trap is that basically, in order for him to possibly get everybody out, Kanan's going to have to like hold. Kanan's going to be like, you know, the Spartans in 300. He's going to be holding out the pass while everybody else runs and gets on the ship, and you know, he'll tell her he loves her, and they'll have their moment, and he'll sacrifice himself to make sure that she survives. And it'll be a good way to die. I mean, that's the way I predict it. That's the way I hope it goes.
Yeah.
I think obviously Ezra's just gonna, you know.
I was gonna say
to Mandalore and hang out with Sabine.
I was about to say, how do you think Ezra plays into this with Kanan?
Oh, I think he's gonna be sad, but I think ultimately, I think generally, Ezra's gonna survive, and I don't really have a problem with that as long as he stops what he's doing.
Like, as long gives as he doesn't up the be Jedi like, way.
I'm going to become the greatest Jedi ever. And it's like the show ends. Yeah, it's more weird.
If he's more, hey, you know what? Harry, you go and do the thing with the rebels. I want to do it on a more, you know, I want to go help you, Sabine, save Mandalore. And he just goes there. And his little world is compact on, you know, whatever.
Or even if he, like, just he goes with Hondo, you know, and every man for himself sick because he's so disillusioned after Kanan dies.
I don't think he'd do that.
I don't think it's likely with the way the show's going. But, like, I'm just thinking, I'm okay with just about anything as long as he goes off and does his own thing. Like you said, like, he can't be the Jedi secret weapon of the rebellion where they leave it off. That would be very unsatisfying unless the next show takes place immediately afterward and follows up on it. You know, like, there's no way to do that.
What if he pops him off? What if he pops up in episode 9 and is ready to help train Rey in her new academy? My name's Ezra, and yeah.
No.
Who? Here's my question. Who's in that age range? Who's in, like, the 6-year age range of Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill that was, because Ezra is born just a week before them, so he should be in their age range. Like, what actor would it be? Like, Michael Keaton? Michael Keaton. Mm-hmm.
I really want Ezra to grow a mustache and change his name to Biggs.
How would he grow up with Luke?
He's leading a double life he never told Kanan about. Easy.
He has a fake mustache this whole time.
Okay, no.
Easy.
That's where he always disappears to.
Here's what's better is that Ezra is so distraught over losing Kanan that he just hides and eats all day. And then everyone starts joking and calling him Porkins.
Like, like Brian Wilson?
Sure, he just hides out.
And he makes pet sounds, too.
That's right. A great album. You know what? If Ezra comes out of this making pet sounds.
Making space pet sounds. We're all
lucky.
We're not talking about Brian Wilson and Sharon Tate and whatever.
Well, I'm just thinking, too, then also because he misses Sabine, he started dyeing his hair. So we've cracked the case of Ezra becoming Porkins. That's his unceremonious end.
He better hurry up, start eating quick.
Or, like, the alternate thing is just like Jared was saying, like, the last scene of Rebels is him like, I want to be the greatest Jedi ever, and that's my mission, and the memory of Kanan, and then just, like, a rock hits him on the head and he forgets the entire thing.
I was going to say, a moon crushes him a la the EU death of Chewbacca. Like, just like, you just got mooned. Like, a moon just bam.
Wait, that happens.
Yeah, that was the first big change that they announced with The Force Awakens. Nobody knew, like, who Rey was or what, you know, any of the characters' names were or anything. They just saw the pictures of the cast and whatnot. You know, they said Mayhew's in it and Chewbacca survived, because in the old EU, Chewbacca got crushed by a moon.
That's a terrible death.
Well, and it's like, the reason why they're keeping him around, why they recast him with Jonas Soto, it's like, he's a long-lived creature. His lifespan's like several hundred years. You just need a guy who's like 6'5" to play him. That's it. Like in a suit. Right. They've got the scream on tape. You're set. Like, they've already got a couple costumes. Like instant Chewbacca. Like, why would you get rid of him in the books?
Chewbacca.
Yeah.
It's just like a little packet you mix with water and instant Chewbacca.
That's exactly right. It's made by Top Ramen.
I prefer taking my time with my Chewbacca. I don't like
slow roast.
Slow cooker Chewbacca is much better.
French roast Chewbacca is the only way to go.
Wow.
All right, guys.
I think it's time.
For Star Wars Wars?
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's about either, but I'm excited.
I don't know what we're fighting about.
I'm sick and tired of you knocking the prequels.
I haven't said anything about the prequels.
Really? Really? Your little response, your little curt. No.
Yeah, that was you talking about the prequels, though.
Yeah, but let me talk about it. Why do you have to jump in and be a friggin' rain cloud on my sunshiny day?
It was called a joke.
No.
Look it up.
Tell me what your problem is with the prequels.
I've stated my problem with the prequels like 50 times, Well, I just don't think they're well written, and I don't think that's a weird complaint. It's kind of obvious. Like, it's not that weird. I'm not like, oh, well, the bombs don't seem that realistic. It doesn't seem like there'd actually be bombs in space. I don't get how that works with the anti-gravity and how did they do it. Like, no, they're just not well written.
Take your straw man and put it away. You can't just say something's not well written without providing evidence. Explain it.
I've explained it 50 times on this podcast.
But here's the deal. You have to treat every podcast like it's a first listen for our listeners. So they may not know which episode to go back to hear your falsehoods. So give them a list right now of where you're wrong so that
I just want to – I got to interject how impressive that says sliding in your falsehoods was right there. It's very well integrated into the sentence.
Thank you.
That's as Andrea is very quick to point out. I know throwing people under the bus, and that was
definitely
chef kiss. You know, finger chef kiss. That was perfect.
I guess my main complaint is that everyone likes to throw out a list. And some of my, I don't even want to make a list because
I will
honestly,
tell you what I don't think is well written about the prequels. If you would like to know,
sure, oh please.
Okay, first of all, they don't delve into Anakin's turn to the dark side well enough. I think,
excuse me?
Personally, did I say that you have a like peanut gallery comment on this?
Do I have the conch yet or no?
No. All so. Right. I think the Clone Wars TV show does a great job on this, and I honestly don't think – I don't know if the movies had enough time to actually get into it, but there's not, like, really a great turning point where I personally feel like Anakin's turn to the dark side is justifiable in the movies. Like – It's just I don't buy it.
What do you count his turn? You count his turn, Mace Windu? Is that his official turn?
Yeah, I would think so.
So you can't see how he would get to that point?
Not really.
You can't see how Mace Windu is basically at that point he's a hypocrite?
Yeah, but I don't feel like the movies go into it enough into how the Jedi Council actually sucks.
I think it does. I think it goes into it perfectly fine. But even if we leave that aside, the fact is that you know from the Phantom Menace that Anakin has a problem with attachments, and so he has a problem letting go. And he sees his mother die. He has visions. He sees her in pain, and he sees her die, and he lashes out, and that's his first taste of the dark side. He lashes out against the Tusken Raiders and he kills everybody. You know, he even says he kills everybody. He screams it in Attack of the Clones. You know, he kills the men, the women, the children, everybody. And that's his rage that he couldn't stop what he saw happening. And so when he sees his wife, you know, Padme, dying, and he wants to stop it, he's at that point doesn't want to go through what he went through with the pain and loss of his mother. He wants to prevent it from happening. And so you've got these two situations coming together to where you've got him wanting to keep his wife alive. You've got the Jedi Council whose hypocrisy is starting to show. And then you've got Palpatine who's been working the strings on both sides and been whispering in his ear the whole time and how you should do this and you should do that. And now I can help you. And guess what? I'm the only one who can save you. And so when it comes time for him to make a decision, he screws up. And then Palpatine feeds his ego. Then Palpatine's like, help me. And at that point, he's already so full of the dark side. He's tasted so much of it that he's just going with it. He doesn't even know what he's doing at that point. He's just going along with it. He's got the eyes, you know, he's just, okay, whatever. I'll go kill a bunch of kids. I'm gonna wipe everybody out as long as I can save my wife. And I think it's well done for the amount of time that they had, you know, to put everything together. It is a solid explanation. Now,
Does the Clone Wars fill in a lot of the gaps? Sure, but I think you can get just from the core three movies a perfect idea of how he turns, and I think it is really well written when the time that they have to do it and put everything together. Let me ask you this.
Do you find Padme and Anakin's relationship well written?
Do I find it well written?
Do you buy that she would actually fall in love with him? Because that's the most difficult part for me. And I feel like that's one of the most important parts that the movies have to portray. And I cannot for the life of me see what she would see in him to like fully fall in love. Like she flat out, like you said, he flat out tells her, I killed all those people. And that was, she's like, oh, it's okay. Everyone gets angry. And I'm like, what?
Any
sane person who is like a strong woman, female character would be like, no, like that's wrong, and would leave at that point, which they did. Like they could have done so much better with Padme. Like she could have been this awesome character.
She was an awesome character. Where wasn't she?
In the entire third movie where she just walks around like dies. See,
the thing is, at that point she has to be pregnant.
And well, so yeah, what? you could still be pregnant. Pregnant ladies go to yoga every day. Pregnant ladies go to work every day.
Oh, but pregnant ladies don't get involved in an intergalactic gunfight or flying ships. You know, the thing is that at that point she has to be ready to have the children, and the children have to be viable. So she has to be in what, 8th month, 7th month, at least, if they're going to be premature. So you've got a situation to where she can't be out there running. She is doing her thing in the Senate. Her situation is she's there to set up the rebellion and the opposition to Palpatine that you start to hear about in the original trilogy. So she's not just sidelined. She's sidelined as an action star. She's sidelined as being in the middle of, you know, the chase and the fights, like she was in Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. But she's not out of the picture. She can't be as active because she's pregnant. I entirely disagree with you know, you saying that she's not important in Revenge of the Sith.
I just think they could have done more with her.
Well, what would you like to have seen?
I don't know. I don't write movies. I would just like to see more.
But the thing is that you're not complaining based upon what you got. You think that you want more. So what was it more that you wanted?
I already said that.
but with the situation is that she's pregnant, what would you like her have done? What would you like to have her do?
I would have liked to see more of her in the Senate and of her working.
Got it. And they're all deleted scenes, Sally, because it's only a 2-hour film.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I still don't buy why she likes him.
Why? You don't think
like
that
he's
you don't
a Jedi? That... Cool, get out of your system and move on. He's obviously like not that great of a person.
I feel like that one's tough though, because both in fiction in general and in the real world, people do just fall for total douchebags for no reason.
Oh God!
And like,
yeah, but they don't really
show no good reason. I feel like that happens in real life, and I don't disagree with you. I think it's a combination of things. For me, the things that I find disappointing in the prequels, which I'm not nearly as down on them as you are, but I also don't feel like they're like the best Star Wars films. Like necessarily, there's things I like about each of them a lot. There's also things I find lacking, but I feel like some actors don't really mesh with George's style of direction as well as others, and I feel like one of those actors is Natalie Portman, and I think that even goes beyond just George. I think she only works with specific directors or specific directing types really well. I think there's other movies I've seen her in where she's flat and others where she's like excellent, so I don't think that's entirely on George as much as it is just they're not a great mix, and I can see like some of that not really coming through, like between the writing being like the style that it is, just this like kind of old school pulpy serial style stuff, especially in Attack of the Clones, which has their romance and the noir mystery and stuff. Like it's very, I feel like it's very much old fashioned story stuff. And the combination of that and their performances, I can see not being like super, not selling it for everybody. The greater point of the him hating the Jedi's and whatnot, or the Jedi and becoming fully embracing the dark side. I agree that they showed it to me successfully in the film enough that like I bought it, but it did make him seem more like a petulant child in a lot of ways. Like the whole issue of him not being a master doesn't really work for me in Revenge of the Sith. Like I just feel like he's just being so like petulant. Like I just want to be a master, and it's not fair. The guy who broke the rules doesn't get to break all the rules. You guys need to make me a master. But like, I sort of do get it with the Clone Wars more because of everything they went through. You know, with all the stuff with Obi-Wan faking its death, and then shortly after that, everything with Ahsoka, it's like those two things make it to where I'm on his side when he is like, because like you point out, Mark, that Mace was being hypocritical. But as it is, just when I saw the film, I was like, it didn't make me dislike the movie, but it just made me less on his side, you know, like if that makes any sense, which is okay. I don't think I'm supposed to be on his side.
Here's the thing. Here's the way I look at it, is that first and foremost, everything that turns him to the dark side is his desire to save his family. That's what ultimately, you know, his family and his loved ones.
I think that's the vast majority of it.
I think that's the main quest, to put it in video game terms. That is what he wants to do. The side quest, the thing that makes him do that, is he distrusts the council. So all the little petulant child stuff is just like, here's a scoop of this, and here's some frosting, and here's some sprinkles on an already great ice cream sundae. It's just, this is why he's ready to chop Mace Windu's hands off.
No, absolutely, I agree with you.
It's not his anger at the Jedi Council and his mistrust and all that. It's just, this is just another log for his already burning fire, you know.
I felt like it was successful. I feel like I'm halfway between you two, where I thought it worked on initial viewing, but I just thought it added so much after the whole the Clone Wars. Like it just made it more powerful, which was the idea, I think, to complement it, to make it better, not necessarily because it was awful, just to add to it, you know.
Right, but what I'm saying is I don't think his childish antics or his, you know, why can't I be part of the Jedi Council in Revenge of the Sith and all that, I don't think it takes away from his turn to the dark side. I think that's the ammunition for his distrust of the Jedi, not his desire to do whatever it takes to save Padme. And so ultimately the two converge in the scene with Palpatine. You know, he has to save Palpatine. And how does he do it? He has to kill Mace Windu or stop Mace Windu. And so luckily, there's been enough things that he's seeing that he finds to be hypocritical that, well, maybe this guy's right and I'm going to stop him because I've seen all these little things that he's doing that seems like a hypocrite to me.
No, I get you, and I don't disagree. Like, I think that I wasn't trying to say that the Jedi were why he turned to the dark side. I just feel like that adds to it is all.
I think it's informing it. You don't walk away hating the Jedi or the Jedi Council and like feeling sympathetic for Anakin, or at least I didn't. But when you watch like Obi-Wan fake his death and no one telling Anakin, you're like, like screw them, he should go to the dark side.
No, I get that, but do you honestly feel good about the character of Mace Windu in Revenge of the Sith? I mean, he's kind of a douche.
No, and they even have his face, like he looks like
turn
crazy.
Evil and destroy the government, like.
No, but he's just kind of like
They do zoom in on his face, like he's nuts when he's about to kill Palpatine. Like he looks crazy.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's a screwed up situation though, because like he's not wrong. Palpatine controlled everything at that point. Like it wasn't, he wasn't going to be able to get a fair trial in that situation. And like Palpatine, it's because Palpatine was the master manipulator. He manipulated not just Anakin, but the whole political situation, where it would look like the Jedi were seizing power, no matter what they said, no matter how right they were. They're like, it would be crazy. It'd be like saying, you know, Trump was a secret, whatever. Like, just but frankly, he wears all his stuff on his sleeve. But if you know what I mean, it's like.
But see, the problem going into that is then you have to, as Mace Windu and Kit Fisto and whoever the hell else went with him. You have to then go against everything that you've sworn to do as a Jedi.
No, you're absolutely right, and it is super hypocritical, and I don't disagree right. with that at all. Like,
and so how is you start taking all these little things, and how is that not fascinating as a story? You know, how is there no story in the prequels, or how is it not well written when you have such, you know. Situations like this, to where it's like, wow, you know, these guys that you thought, you know, they're built up to be such superheroes, and oh, the Jedi, wow, you know, in the original trilogy, and when you finally see them, they've got issues and they've got problems, and it only furthers to develop Luke's character when he decides to give all that teaching up and all that training up and lay down his lightsaber to save his father, you know, because Yoda and Obi-Wan are telling him, you can't do it. You got to fight him. You're not strong enough. You're not this. And he doesn't listen to any of it. And because they were wrong. And they even, you know, now they even know that they were wrong. But it's just, it's a nice building block for what we see later. You don't have to watch them to get the story. But I think it's a really well-written, all three of them as a whole, you know, to kind of supplement what we got in the original trilogy. And everybody likes to crap on Attack of the Clones and put it at the bottom of their list. But, I mean, that has some of the coolest things in it of the entire prequel trilogy, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I love seeing Kamino and Jango Fett and the asteroid, you know, fight, you know, with the sonic bombs. And I love the creatures, the Reek and the Nexu and the Ackley and the whole arena scene, you know, and I don't understand anybody when Yoda first came out and pulled his lightsaber out in Attack of the Clones, man, that was amazing because you didn't know that he was capable of it.
You know how often I've talked about that stuff, that powerful, like, and as much as I don't like the way the romance necessarily plays for me, like that has the best music.
the whole Across the Stars is, in my opinion, the best.
Across the Stars
music.
Is the
it's,
best.
It's Star Wars so song. Good.
From the prequel,
so good.
It's best
no,
music.
From everything. From everything, that's the best Star Wars song.
Well, wow. You just went up me, girl.
And between that and
listen, I'm not 100% hater. I just wish they were like, it's like out of love. Like I wanted them to be better than they were. Like it's not like I want to hate anything that's Star Wars. Like it's not like just like I'm not someone who just like hates stuff just to hate it. Like just because it's fun. Like I don't really find it fun to like just hate stuff. But at the same time, I want to be critical of the stuff I love because you want it to be the best it can be. It's like any relationship with that or any friendship. Like you want that person to be, you want everyone to be their best self. So you don't want to just like be like, well, that's good, like all the time.
I know, I definitely know what you mean. Because of like, for me, the Batman stuff. You know, recently I'm not into it all, and I'm a huge Batman fan. And like, but I also feel like I grew up in an era where it started off really fun and rad and got progressively worse. So I was sort of trained to be okay with not loving everything that comes out from something that I do love. And I feel like the prequels are a very mixed bag. Like it's okay to be critical of them for sure. And you're not like the worst hater in the world, but I also feel like it's unfair to act like it's just crazy to like any of it. You know what I mean? Like, which is, I'm not saying you do, but some people do. And I feel like that's maybe where Mark's coming from a little bit, but
a little bit. I mean, it's not so much, you know, like you're crazy. You know, I'm just using you today as an example. but thanks. I think ultimately you're welcome. It's compelling radio podcast.
So, Mark, what would you put at the bottom of your list?
Boy, I don't want to make a list. Do I have to?
I don't. I mean, you were the one who was talking about lists. I wouldn't make a list.
I don't want to make a list. I honestly don't.
I like that we're not list makers. I like you guys.
I feel like it just changes all the time.
That's me too. Well, like, it's what I'm in the mood for.
The most well-constructed filmic Star Wars movie to me is the original. In its original presentation, you know, there was one, I probably told a story a million times, but there's one time where I was intoxicated, inebriated, high on something, and I watched the original, not special edition, the original A New Hope, on Laserdisc, and I was like, this is the greatest movie ever, and it is. It's the best made Star Wars movie. Now, is it my favorite? Probably not. But I will say it's the best made Star Wars movie. Everything that I like about Star Wars, my favorite things all appear in Empire. Yoda, Boba Fett, AT-ATs, you know, Hoth, Tauntauns, you know, you get Rancor in Return of the Jedi, but everything to me, the most important stuff is an Empire. So is that my favorite movie? I don't know, but it's the stuff I like the most. And then when you look at, you know, like the prequel trilogy, the stuff I love the most, thing-wise, creatures and the designs and all that, is Attack of the Clones. Now, is it my favorite movie from the prequels? Probably not. But I don't think it deserves, I think it tries to be so many different things that everyone's willing to, it doesn't have the Darth Maul fight, you know, it doesn't have Darth Maul and Kenobi and Liam Neeson's and it doesn't have Revenge of the Sith where everything ends. It's stuck in the middle, and I think people are readily at the bottom of any list if you have to make a list, and that's why these lists kind of annoy me after a while. It's just okay. There, if you got to put something there, put something there, but you don't always have to make a list.
Well, and I just feel like, what rubric are we looking at these lists? And I think of it as like, you know, when I rank something or graded something as a teacher, you don't just go with your gut or your feeling. And that's what we do as fans with Star Wars, and that's fine. But it's like, when you actually do use a really critical lens on everything, you know, I love Empire. It's fantastic. People act like it's unassailable. But from a from one perspective, I think it's the least successful Star Wars film. And that is the fact that it does not stand on its own in any way.
Nope.
The ending is not satisfying. If you have never seen Star Wars and you will never see Return of a Jedi and you just saw Empire, you'd go out of it thinking there were so many cool things, but you'd feel like it missed the mark, I think, because you'd be super like what? It just ended. But like, it's such an interesting thing because it's not a movie that exists on its own in a vacuum. It is the second part of a trilogy that when they were creating it, knew they were going to make the third one. But so it's something unique and different. It's like Lord of the Rings almost, but without source material. But at the same time, like, we can't just look at everything like it's in a vacuum. And I think you're right. Like, it's unfair for that it always goes to the bottom of the list. Like, it's one that I've watched at different times in my life. I've watched the most frequently because of that Yoda fight. And I do think the stuff with the Jango Fett hunt, you know, and going to the diner and stuff, like the weird Obi-Wan detective story, is fun. Like there's a lot to enjoy. And it's not a perfect movie, but it's not the complete garbage fire that people, it's not Spice World, you know, it's not like that.
Right. And who didn't want to see all these Jedi battle together? You know, maybe they didn't want to see them fight bug creatures, but you still have, you know, when all the lightsabers light up in the arena, it's like, okay, wow. You know, that's something that I haven't seen before. And I think, you know, you're talking about just lists and all this. You know, you look at there's only one single movie that can stand on its own. And that's Star Wars, A New Hope.
Yeah, it is. It's the only one that really, I mean, I feel like other ones have, everything I think does have a little bit of a more satisfying, like Empire is such, well, no, I feel like Force Awakens has the same problem. Like, just the ending is just such a cliffhanger, you know, like you need to see the follow up or it's just,
but if somebody said, "Show me a Star Wars movie to hook me," what are you going to show?
I would definitely go with Star Wars. I would.
Yeah.
Like you're right. That's the only one that's a completely satisfying done in one story because that's what he thought he was doing. Like every other one, that's never been the case. They've always known more is coming. Every other one, it's like, I'm finishing with another one. It's the only one that was made like a movie that was supposed to be a movie on its own. And it's because of that, it has something that the others don't. And I think that that's what that is, in addition to being filmic, you know, and just a classic. Like, it is. It's the most mythic. It's the most, like, it's just this story. Because Darth Vader isn't his dad yet. It has nothing to do with it. You know, there is no lineage yet. That's why the Rey parentage thing doesn't bug me at all, because when you see Star Wars, that's Luke's story. He didn't come from anything. And if you trace it back with the prequels, even with the added history, that's not Anakin's story. He wasn't the chosen. He wasn't the seventh son of the Space King. You know, Anakin is a slave born from nothing. Like, and that's okay. Like we don't need a magic history.
Yep. You know, even something similar that I've been thinking about recently. You know, I obviously think John Williams is the greatest composer that ever lived. But of these three films that have come out, of Force Awakens, Rogue One, and The Last Jedi, my favorite music is the ending from Rogue One. It's pretty much from the point when they're fighting on the beach with Chirrut and Baze until the end of the movie. That is the best music in these three movies. And he composed it in a matter of weeks.
And yeah, so for me, rush, like, right?
Right. And so am I saying that John Williams' music is not the greatest ever? No. I'm just saying for me, what's worked is this. And everybody has their own thing, you know. Well, but would I put Rogue One as the best on a list? Probably not. But that's what's worked for me.
Well, it's funny because I was just seeing comments the other day that somebody was discussing The Last Jedi and how they were the soundtrack and how they're disappointed with it. And the person's like, but then again, I was disappointed with The Force Awakens because it didn't sound like Star Wars to me. And then with Rogue One, like basically Giacchino, like he gave it a nice shot, but again, missed the mark as far as sounding like Star Wars. And I'm like, what did you listen to? You know,
well, Steven, what are you wanting?
Yeah. Like,
The prequels didn't sound like Star Wars. They were their own entity.
Thank you. That's exactly the point I've been trying to make. I've said that to somebody a long time ago. I forget. But when Duel of Fates is amazing. When it first came out, it was 0% like Star Wars.
No, but yeah, everybody I knew, like all the Star Wars fans and all the casual, regular people, and well, I mean, pretty nerdy, but not into Star Wars people I knew, like everybody just, they love that so much.
Because of what it's set to, though. You're getting to see two Jedi versus a Sith.
And he's the coolest looking character. Like, he looks so rad. Like all these people, these guys who were like jocks in my high school, you know, were like asking me about stuff. This was that era, like the X-Men movie and like, you know, all these shows being on for the first time, all these different cartoons and the prequels coming out, where like all these people who picked on me when I was in grade school for liking Star Wars and Star Trek came up to me and were like, hey, what's the story about this Darth Maul guy? Like, he's amazing. He looks so cool. Or asking me to like settle arguments about like who would win in superhero fights. Like, I was like the tide is changing, but I didn't realize that 20 years later, like, the only things that would be successful in theaters would be superhero movies and Star Wars. It would be everything in culture would be like somehow now the nerds are the experts. It's very, very weird. And it's going to end just like there aren't, you know, 1300 Westerns made every year anymore. It changes. There'll be something else coming on the horizon eventually.
There was the war films. There was the Western films. Then there was the gritty, you know, cop films and
I hope it's Look Who's Talking. I hope it's babies.
Please, no.
Okay, I hope so.
Trying to end the podcast. You and your little baby boss baby.
It was a direct transition to Boss Baby discussion. It was such a good movie.
No, I
had to tell somebody the other day that yes, no, we were earnest because Blake and Colin and I were all in one place.
Can't support a movie with that guy in it. That guy needs to have his face pushed in the dirt.
There's a lot of men in Hollywood that need their face pushed in.
Well, he seems to be skating right by.
It'll come. Boss, baby? His time will come. Yeah, and I also watched Parks and Rec, and look what just came out about Aziz. So, like,
no, and I can respect
it's all of them. It's all of them. It's a freaking disease.
Can we not have Chris Pratt, please? Can we just leave him alone?
Oh, he's definitely there's definitely gonna be stuff about him too.
There's a few people who I just can't handle. Like I'm really
you know
really
who there's gonna be stuff about.
Who?
Who?
Well, I mean, I don't know for sure, so obviously like no one sue me for saying this, but I heard rumblings about Riz from Rogue One.
Oh, you know,
oh, that's already come out.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Oh, it already came out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I didn't hear anything specific. Like, I heard that something was coming about him. Did something actually come out? Because that was the same thing. There was a report like a month or so ago about Jeff Goldblum where someone was like, I think something's coming. And so that makes me think like it's...
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Man, I'm going to be so sad if something does come out. Like, but at the same time, like Andrea's saying, like, it's so rare. The only person who would actually shock me at this point would be Mr. Rogers because I've learned so much about him and read so much about him. And he was such an interesting dude.
John Williams would shock me.
No, and like, and there are a few where it'd just be like, it'd be so upsetting. But it's like the guy who got fired from WME who harassed Terry Crews and a bunch of women as well. Like that guy worked with the people who represented the comic company I worked for. You know, it's like you can't escape it. Everybody in Hollywood.
It's a disease of our culture.
Not to turn this into political or current events type of situation, but before I forget, I just wanted to thank you for a nice discussion, Andrea.
Oh, no problem. You're welcome.
You just happened to say no at the right time for me today to a post from yesterday about Attack of the Clones. So...
It's my pleasure.
Yes.
It was a good conversation, though. I liked.
Yeah, I thought it was good on both sides. I hope that I opened your eyes a little bit. If not, well, you know, I gave a shot.
You lead a horse to water, all that good stuff.
Are you calling her a horse?
I'm using an expression.
I'm a person, Tim.
Jeez, I'm a, Tim. You're a person. Name, your name's Andrea.
Got it. All right, got it.
Okay.
I love you guys.
It was fun. I really didn't contribute to that conversation, but that's mostly because I really just wanted to hear what you guys were saying, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. There's not much to talk about.
Tim, do you have any comments, Ed?
Not really. All right. Just the one thing I would say, and do not ask me any follow-up questions, is that... I said this to Mark.
I don't agree to that. Go on.
Well, I said this to Mark on Twitter, but I do feel like a lot of people have Attack of the Clones as the worst Star Wars movie, and I disagree with that. For me, it is not at the bottom. But anyway, I just want
to
throw
that
out there.
No. Now you have to tell us what the bottom is. You have to.
I refuse because there are so many people who would give me far too much crap for that. And
no, you have the right to your opinion. Come on.
You open the door. You open the door. Just
you
push
opened
the box.
It.
That's like I've Come got on. A secret.
Okay.
All right.
All right. That is fair. So, I will just preface it with that. Still, even my least favorite of them, I will still watch all day, every day because it's still amazing. Right.
Understand. We understand that you love all your children.
Right.
This is the least favorite child.
And Phantom Menace is my least favorite of them.
Oh, you're fine. You're not going to get added on that one.
Yeah. And
no one's going to pile on you for that.
No, there's someone in particular I'm kind of afraid of right now, but we'll see.
Well, either way, you don't hate it, right? Like, it's okay.
No,
man.
No, it's just of them all.
And if you did it, like, I wouldn't agree with you, but I mean, come on, man. There's some more important stuff to get upset about.
I'm just saying, because there's some people, that's their favorite.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I do.
So. And I was actually just talking about that with someone.
That's my friend's favorite of all of them.
Well, I was just talking with someone the other day about it, and she said exactly the same thing, that it's her least favorite of them, and there are things she doesn't like about it, but she'll still watch it all day, every day. So I'm like, that's how I feel.
Yeah, I got a buddy I work with. His first Star Wars movie he ever saw in the theater
or period was Phantom Menace. It's his favorite movie out of all of them.
Well, and that makes sense partially. If it's your introduction. You know, it makes sense. The first part is the same.
So it's just one of those things.
My first Star Wars toy was like a little Anakin, like a little baby Anakin from The Phantom Menace. And he had like, I don't know where it was from. I think it was from McDonald's. And he had like a little clear stand he stood on. And I thought it was a hoverboard. So I would just make him like hoverboard, like on my Barbies.
That is my biggest criticism of the Phantom Menace, is why didn't he have a hoverboard? Right. I've never thought of that until now, but it would only make everything better.
Maybe that's why. Maybe that's what it's rooted in, is that I really just wanted hoverboards to be in the prequel.
That's the whole reason you have any issue with the prequel. Yeah, it's just like, hey, I was promised hoverboards by McDonald's, and you lied.
Took the stand to be a hoverboard. I remember it so clearly. It was like little clear, and it had his picture on it, and then the toy like stood on it. I'm gonna try and find a picture afterwards.
I really love this. This is great. We've diagnosed the root of your prequel vision.
So that I wanted hoverboards.
I just want them to, like, Lucasfilm to come out with all 8 movies Andrea edition, where everybody just slides around on hoverboards.
It would only make
I think they would fit right in Star Wars.
Yeah,
it sort of feels like, why don't they have them? Like,
yeah, at this point, Episode 9, JJ, there's still time.
I mean, if Marty McFly had it, like,
guys, I'm pretty sure we just figured out it's gonna be Star Wars Episode 9: the one with the hoverboard.
Like an episode of Friends.
Yes, exactly.
Oh. Seinfeld 2000 to tweet about it now. Jerry buys hoverboard.
Man, I saw the oldest person on one of those things they call hoverboards the other day, and
those
it was very
fake. Those don't float.
I don't feel like you should be able to call them that. Like, they're just weirdo segways.
They're like primitive hoverboards.
They're
that
just
don't
like
hover.
Electronic skateboards.
Hoverboards, yeah. Don't hover. That's like, get into my hover car.
They're like ice skateboards.
Yeah, when I heard that people have hoverboards, I was so excited. I was like, finally. Because you guys don't understand. I'm going to delve into this a little bit. I really wanted hoverboards to be a thing. When I was little, I used to like have pages in my notebook where I was like drawing hoverboards, and I was trying to invent them at like 9 years old.
I think you guys know that, like, my number 2 movie after or tied with Star Wars is Back to the Future. So
right.
I've wanted hoverboards since Back to the Future 2 came out. Like, it's been pretty much, it's just been like, all right, 2015, you got a little while, guys. Let's get on this. So the last 2 to 3 years have just been hell.
I'm so excited. I was like, hoverboards are coming. I'm going to get one. I'm going to buy a helmet. Like, I'm so ready. And then I saw them and I was like, that is not a hoverboard. You could not fly with that.
Yeah, it's total BS. We got totally scammed. They lied to us.
Okay. All right. So that's my opinion on hoverboards.
All right.
So, well, last thing that we do before we go, though, I want to ask each and every one of you one word to describe the first 2 years of this podcast, and you're not allowed to repeat each other.
Oh, geez. Okay, then. All right.
We'll start with Andrea. Put her on the spot.
Enjoyable Mondays.
That's 2 words.
You said 1 to 2 words.
I said 1 word.
Well, I've heard it as 1 to 2 words.
You can't argue with that, Tim. I'm trying to figure it out, but
you just basically, Andrew just described her attitude for this podcast for the 2 years. Doesn't follow rules.
we'll go with it. We'll just go with it. So, Jared.
Family.
Oh, you
stole Mark's. I crept it.
Yeah, literally, like.
Lame.
Ripped it. There you go.
No, I'm not even kidding.
Oh.
Fun.
Okay. It's like.
Go ahead.
It's like a thing. Ahead, it's a thing, apparently, because, Mark, you just stole mine. So.
Yeah.
Well. See, no one stole mine.
Because yeah, it was two words.
Exactly. Don't casual follow the rules Mondays. So no one can take it.
That's true.
It's like Garfield, except instead of saying, I hate Mondays, he's saying, enjoyable Mondays.
Enjoyable Mondays is what he said. All right.
Okay, I'm just going to say great. That's the best I can do since he stole
I
mine.
Thought your superlative compliment I thought was fine.
That's no.
In the past, you've described things as fine and then said, no, I really liked it.
Tim, can we end with the celebration music from Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, that works. Should I'm going to modify. I'm just going to say stupendous. Wait, yeah, no, original. Like
which?
The Yubnub,
yeah, yeah. Right? I was just confirming that this is the Yubnub.
Yeah, yeah, I'll put yes. that in.
Yeah, and, you know,
I don't dislike the new one, but I do prefer Yubnub. That's my old man.
I will say, I like them both. I prefer the new one because I see it as more fitting for the events of the film, but they're both good.
I just don't get why that's not a bigger deal than the Han Shot First thing. Like, it's just so much more important to me. Like, it really is. Like, I don't care enough to, like, complain because it's still there for me, you know? Like, it doesn't take anything away from me, but there's the new music. And like you said, specifically because in the special edition, they show other planets. Like, if they were just on Endor, I think that Yub-Nub is better. But the second you go off planet, it's a little weird. Like, it wouldn't really work, you know, showing them tearing down a statue where it's like Ewoks singing. Like, I don't know. That'd be weird. So I get where you're coming from, Tim, even though it's not how I feel. I understand your perspective.
Well, and the other thing, another perspective quick, that I'll tell you some other time.
Real quick before we leave, though, the funny thing is you can't even get the new special edition celebration music right now if you listen to something like Apple.
But you can if you listen to something like Amazon. It's free there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, they lost the rights to it. So you've got Yub-Nub. You can listen to it all day. And Lopty Neck.
Yeah.
How about that one?
No, yeah. Cause this is my mini plug. If you use Amazon Music, if you just are a Amazon Prime member at all, then you have access to their music, and they have the original versions of the original trilogy soundtracks for free streaming.
Really?
Yes.
Which ones?
The original like Jedi has Yub-Nub and Lopty Neck and all that.
Right. You can't get the new celebration music.
You can only get the old right now.
Right. That's
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, on Amazon.
Need, though, yeah. That means we're going to get a new CD soon.
But I don't mind that because I already own the current version. So I have them both.
Once Star Wars has its own streaming service up, they'll
oh
they'll,
god,
they'll all on that. Oh, it's happening.
I know. I didn't even think about that until you said something.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you all for being on, and thank you for being on for the past. Well, I started to say past 2 years, but
104 weeks.
I mean, however long that we've been on, you know, Andrea, however long everybody's been on. thank you everybody for
being
on.
Happy birthday, podcast 287.
Yes. And we need to find the date that Andrea came on the first time so we can have a first anniversary with her. Have we passed it yet?
I think we've passed
the
it.
First
think,
one? Yeah.
I, yeah,
oh,
I think
yeah.
we have.
By quite a bit. Cause yeah. Cause we did all the holidays and
oh yeah. The whole Wegmans thing and all that. Yeah. So it's our, man, we missed the year anniversary of Andrea.
It's okay.
Andrea-versary.
Oh my god, bye. Bye.
Yeah, we're done. Bye. We'll be right back.